This is Inside the Dressing Room, a new podcast brought to you by LCFC Radio. And now it's time for episode number 4. So far, we've heard dressing room stories and celebrations from Matt Elliott, Dean Hammond and Tony Cotty. Don't forget, you can still listen to those episodes at any time on lcfc.com and all your usual podcast providers by searching for Leicester City Football Club. We're going to now, though, rewind to 1993 for the arrival of a Welsh international on Filbert Street.
Roberts arriving too!
It is it! It is now from Roberts!
Signing Ewan Roberts. Good effort! Yes! Oh, magic stop!
Right quick, it's Roberts again!
Super strike from Ewan Roberts!
Welcome to this edition of Inside the Dressing Room with a man whose last game for the Foxes was over 24 years ago, but you often still hear his name chanted by Leicester fans, particularly on trips away from home. It's the man with the Welshman's hat, Ewan Roberts. Thank you very much for joining us.
How are you, Dad?
Yeah, very well, thank you. It must be nice knowing that you Leicester fans obviously still fondly remember you and still sing your names, as I said, on many away trips.
It's honestly, as a former player, it's great. It shows that you did something right in your time at the club. And I was only there for just over 2.5 years, so it's not as if I was there for a long period of my career. But it was a time where I thoroughly enjoyed. I really, really did. You know, scored goals, enjoyed my time, had a successful couple of years, you know, winning promotion to the Premier League through the playoffs, finished top scorer in the 2.5 years I was there, and from minute one, you know, from my first game, I sort of hit it off with the fans straight away. And I think they like a hard worker, someone who puts himself about. Might not be the most skillful of players, but you know, always leaves everything out on the pitch. And that was the type of player that I was, sort of thing. What I lacked in ability, I think I made up with hard work and honest endeavour. And I think fans take to those types of players, to be fair. But yeah, I had a great relationship with Leicester fans and still do to this day, as you say.
Yeah, when you signed from Huddersfield in 1993, what was the story behind that? Why Leicester, and were there any other clubs maybe that you could have gone to?
Well, I signed a new contract that summer with Huddersfield. Neil Warnock had taken over. He wanted me to stay. I signed a new 3-year contract with the club, so my future was sorted. I was going to be in West Yorkshire for the next 3 years. Never asked to leave the club whatsoever, but then he wanted some money to bring his type of player into the club. But the chairman at Huddersfield at the time told him, well, you know, we've got no money to spend, so you're going to have to sell before you could buy to get some finances in. And my name cropped up, and three clubs had shown an interest, and I think three had sort of thrown different offers in. One was Leicester, the other one was Notts County and Coventry. So, you know, all three not too far from each other. So I can remember driving down on a Thursday afternoon, nipping into Meadow Lane, having a meeting with the manager there and the chairman. And I liked what they had to say. They were good people. Like the stadium, but I wasn't going to make my mind up straight away. You know, I wanted to speak to Coventry, I wanted to speak to Leicester, and for some reason, driving down the M1, instead of coming off at Junction 21 and going to Filbert Street to meet Brian Little, I sort of went past the junction and went to Coventry first to meet Phil Neal at Coventry's training ground, to talk to them. For some reason, I don't know why, I never sort of hit it off with, it didn't feel right for some reason for me, and I can't put my finger quite on it. And Phil Neal was a hero of mine, because I'm a Liverpool fan, you know, he's a Liverpool legend, but I just didn't get the right feeling from him. So left and got in the car with my wife and my young son, went to Filbert Street, met Brian Little. And I don't know what it was, Dan. As soon as I walked into his office, as soon as I met the man, I just thought, I want to play for Leicester. I want to play for Brian Little. He just had such a good, kind nature about him. He made me and the family feel welcome. You know, he was softly spoken. He was just great. And from the very first second I met him, from the first minute I saw that new stand being built, was it the Carling stand? I think it was the Carling stand. It wasn't finished, but you could just see how impressive that stadium was. And I just wanted to play there. And I had no hesitation. Agreed personal terms, travelled up back to Huddersfield to pick some stuff up. And that was the Thursday. And I made my debut on the Saturday at home to Wolves.
Right, let's talk about that debut, Ewan. You probably had the idea that I'd bring it up. It was a fantastic debut. If anyone said to you, as a striker, you're going to score two goals on your debut at home, you'd be like, yep, delighted with that. But it could have been more, and you know that it could have been more, Ewan.
It should have been a better debut, Dan. It should have been a better debut. And it still haunts me to this day, the chance that I missed, the easiest of the lot. It was one of those, as it's coming across, I'm 3 yards out, if that, and I've made the cardinal sin as a centre forward, thinking I've scored before I've made contact and put the ball in the net. And that's fatal. Whether I took my eye off, I had to slide in a little bit, but you've got to score that. You've got to score that. And I've ballooned it into the cop, and I just could not believe it. And, you know, the start of the debut didn't go great. We're 2-0 down at half time. We're booed off the Filbert Street pitch, and I'm thinking, bloody hell, what am I? What am I signing for? These are the shambles. But we came back in that second half, and you know, my first goal was probably the best header I'd ever scored. It was a great ball in from Gary Mills on the right hand side. I've just made great contact, and McStowell was a good mate of mine from my times at Wolves. And obviously he's been coaching at Leicester now for years and years. It flew past him. Then to get the equaliser after, I think it was David Speedy, who made a right hash of things after I've headed it across, and he's sort of gone to head it in from a couple of yards, and it's come off his shoulder back to me, and I've smashed it into the roof of the net. And it, honestly, because I'd never scored on my debut for Watford, for Huddersfield, so to get us back into the game, I was chuffed to bits. But yeah, that missed chance still haunts me. Because two's good. Three goals on his debut, that would have been ridiculous.
But it did start your love affair, as you said, with the Filbert Street faithful. Going inside the dressing room now, who was the funniest dressing room character during your time at Leicester City?
When I first signed, I got really close to David Speedy. Centre forward, he's obviously a fellow Celt, being a Scotsman. And he was just a real lively character. You know, he's like a little pocket rocket. He always had plenty to say. He was always, and a dressing room is a place that anything goes. Do you know what I mean? You can say anything about anyone. You can have a go at people's mums, brothers, sisters, wives. Honestly, Dan, it can be absolutely what's the word I'm looking for? It could be a ruthless place, and you've got to be a strong sort of character to be able to deal with all that. You know, it's not done maliciously. It's all what they call a bit of fun, a bit of banter, a laugh and a joke. And there was no one worse than Speedo. And I got on really well with David. Obviously, we were strike partners, but he was one of the most ruthless people I've ever heard and met in the dressing room. He would absolutely slaughter people. And the one good thing about being his mate and getting on well and getting close to Speedo, he never picked on me. And maybe that's one reason why I sort of did get close to him, because I'd seen him rip into people and not reduce people players to tears, because that would never happen. So I sort of kept on his right side. So Speedo was lively. Speedo was really, really lively. That's a good night's out. I remember after we beat, who did we beat? We beat Tranmere in the playoff in my first season. And he'd been sent off the night before for a bit of a fight with Tranby's keeper, Eric Nixon, who's about 6 foot five, built like a brick, and Speedo's 5 foot six, but like he's like a little boy, but he'd fight anybody with David. Anyway, we've got in the day after on the Wednesday just for a meeting, just to see what's what and how we were going to prepare for the final. Like obviously, I'd played in that second leg semi final because I'd broken ribs, and it must have been about 10:30, and we've had literally a 10-minute meeting. And Brian Little has gone right. You can have a couple of days off. Me and Speedo have headed. There was a pub down close to Foss Park. Me and Speedo have just got into a taxi. He dropped us off there, and I think we were knocking on the door for them to let us in. It was a place that we sort of used regularly because it was close to David's house and not close from, and quite close to my house in Countersthorpe. So we knew about this little pub, and I can't for the life of me remember what it was called. But we were knocking on the door, they let us in, and we were there from about 11 o'clock to about 10 o'clock at night, and we were absolutely smashed. You've got to celebrate your wins, haven't you, reaching Wembley. I mean, I've never played at Wembley, so yeah, we had a good day with Sad. But I think probably the funniest lad in my 2.5 years at Leicester would have to be Gary Parker. Parker was brilliant. He had, even though he was from Oxford, he had that West Country accent. You're right, and a little bit, north, a bit, a little, sounded a little bit like Norfolk, if you like. But Parks was funny, you know. Park was, he had some great one-liners, and I remember one sort of prank he played on Mike Yeoman, the physio. We had Alan Smith, who left to go to Villa, and we had Mike. We had two physios at the time, and Mike was an arachnophobic. Is that the word? He hated spiders.
Spiders, yeah.
He couldn't stand even these little things. He could not go anywhere near. And a lot of people are like that. I mean, in the physio's room up at Beaver Drive, Parks had found this massive spider in the changing room. And Parks didn't mind spiders, so he's picked it up. It wasn't tarantula size, but it weren't far off. It was this big hairy thing, and I'd have been picking it up with a load of tissue. I wouldn't be picking it with bare hands like Parks did. Anyway, he put it in his hand, he closed his hand, he walked into the physio's room, and Mick was treating someone at the time. I don't know who he was treating. Anyway, Parks got hold of his collar, pulled his collar back, and quickly threw this spider down the back of his shirt. Oh my god, he nearly had a heart attack. I mean, it was funny at the time. But looking back, it's not funny because bloody hell, he could have had a heart attack or something like that. Because if you don't like something, you don't like something. There's not a lot you can do. But obviously, everybody in there, and we all knew it was going to happen. So there was about 15, 20 of us had congregated in the physio's room up at Beaver Drive, waiting for this to happen. And I mean, Mick's face, he just went white with fear, bless him. But because the joke was on somebody else, everybody else laughed.
Yeah, a lot of people have mentioned Gary Parker as their answer.
He was great in the dressing room, Dan. Honestly, he was life and soul. He was life and soul. And he'd come from a big club. He'd played for Forest. He'd played for Villa. He'd played for big clubs and had a lot of success. But he was a proper down-to-earth lad. You know, no big-time Charlie. We used to have nights out as a squad. And they would, if we weren't playing in midweek, a few of us would go out on a Tuesday night and have a good night. But when Parks came, that changed, and he would make sure that the majority of the squad would go out. You know, we would go out as a squad of players, and I think that's a good thing. That gets that togetherness, that team spirit. I think that gets that to another level, and he was a big part of that. You know. On a Tuesday night, when Parks was here, he would gather 15 to 20 lads to go out and have a few drinks, a few games of pool, a few games of snooker. And I think you could tell that by the way we played together on the pitch and the results that we got and the promotion that we won that year when Parks was here.
Who was the most influential manager during your time at the club?
Oh, that is a hard question, flipping out. Because all three were, in all fairness, You know, Brian is a big reason why I signed for the club. He gave me a chance to play in the Championship. You know, he had faith in paying, even though it's not a lot this day and age, £325,000 for me for Huddersfield. I don't think Leicester were a club that were playing big money for players sort of back in the early 90s. So he was hugely influential. He was massively influential on my decision to join the club. So I think I probably would opt for Brian because of the reasons I've given you. But I enjoyed my time under Mark McGee. I enjoyed the football that we played under Mark McGee. I thought we were a tremendous footballing side in that period when Mark took over. And I loved my time when Martin took over. You know, Martin had a lot of faith in me. He never wanted me to leave. You know, things happened that off the pitch that probably shouldn't have. And I liked Martin's management style. I think he liked me as a player. I think all three had big influences on me in my career. But I think because he brought me to the club, because he initially showed the faith in me to spend the money to bring me to Leicester City, I would have to say Brian.
What was he like as a person and behind the scenes as well then?
My first game, that Wolves game, we were shocking in the first half. And 9 managers out of 10 would have come in. Because the changing rooms weren't quite finished in the new stand, so we were changing in porter cabins behind the Carling stand, and you know, 2-0 down at half time, we've had an absolute shocker. He's come in, and a lot of managers I'd worked for, it would be absolutely kicking tables, throwing cups, effing and blinding. Brian just took it all in his stride. He was so calm, so softly spoken, and he just said, lads, that's simply not good enough. And I hate doing this, but I'm going to have to make a couple of changes. And I think he took two of the central defenders off. Like, I think it was Brian Carey and Colin Hill, I think. And I think he brought Simon Grayson and Richard Smith on, or I think Gary Mills and Richard Smith were. It was definitely Richard Smith was one of them. I'm not sure if it was Larry or Mills, the other one. But it's just the manner that he did, and that's what he was like. He was such a cooling, calming influence on a dressing room and on a squad. When things weren't going right, you know, he weren't a big ranter and raver. He had his own ways of dealing with things and getting an improvement in training and an improvement in performances. Those managers are few and far between. I've not worked with a manager that was so cool on and off the pitch as Brian was, and you know, I think that the players they responded to that, and they had the utmost respect for the way that Brian worked. And he had a good team with him as well. You know, he had John Gregory and Alan Evans, and they were good people. They were good footballing people, and they were a good team. Those three, they worked well together. They all got on well together. That's why the club had the success that he did. What, 2 playoff finals, or 3 consecutive playoff finals? You know, the one we won against Derby, the 2 that you lost in the previous season against Blackburn and Swindon. And for the club to do that, you know, at the third time of asking to win promotion, having suffered defeat twice in a playoff final, that shows that club and those players and that manager and his coaching staff have got a lot of character.
Mm. Well, I mean, you might then have answered the next question, because it's what's the most memorable team talk? Now, this can be pre, during or after a game, and it can be for the wrong reasons or for the right reasons. Presumably that one at half-time on your debut was a pretty memorable one. Is that the most memorable one?
I think it has to be because of the way we came back in the second half, and just in the manner that it was delivered, really. You know, we were walking into that porter cabin thinking he's going to go absolutely ballistic. Wolves scored 2, Stevie Bull scored 2 goals. They could have had 3 or 4. You know, it could have got messy in that first half. That's how bad we were. You know, we never turned up. And Brian had every right to absolutely go ape with us in that 15, 20 minute period at half time. But he never, he just kept his cool. And you know, as a manager, you've got to be reactive to things. You've got to be proactive. And that's what he was. He wasn't going to give the 11 that started that first half a chance to start the second half. He had to make changes. You know, he wasn't afraid of making changes. And that's what he did. But it was just the way, in the manner that he delivered his team talk at half-time. Cool, calm. And I think that sort of then gave us the confidence to go out in the second half and probably play as coolly and as calmly as the team talk that he'd given us at half-time.
Yeah, like you said, it obviously worked. You were 2-0 down and you came back and drew 2-2.
I should have won the game.
Yeah. I didn't want to say it, Ewan.
Absolutely should have won the game. You know, I want to come back. That would have been, you know, to have played as badly as we did in that first half, probably the worst 45 minutes that I can remember in my Leicester career. But then probably the second half has to be up there with the best, the way we came back. And we absolutely battered Wolves in that second half. You know, it was one-way traffic. I mean, Stevie Thompson and Aggers in midfield absolutely ran the show. You know, Millsy down that right-hand side, just putting crosses in left, right and centre. Mickey Whitlow down the left-hand side the same. The two centre-halves were solid. You know, never gave Bully a kick in that second half. I don't think Gavin Ward had too much to do in that second half. So it was a dominant 45 minutes from us, and that was all down to the team talk that Brian had given us.
Who was the best player you played with during your time at Leicester City?
I think, because you've asked me to pick my dream 11, and we'll get to that a little bit later. And one of the players that's in that 11, I had the privilege to play with only for a brief season, and it was a tough season for us. My second season in the Premier League for Leicester, my first in the Premier League. But Mark Draper, so much ability, another great lad, another great signing for the club. You know, club paid a lot of money for him, but he had great ability, great passing range. Could score a goal, you know, had a good strike on him, a confident boy. I played against Mark when he was at Notts County, and I'd always thought, you know, he had really, really good ability. But you don't realise how good someone is until you actually train with him on a daily basis, until you're in the same team as him, and you can see what he brings and his passing range and his vision. Drakes was a top player, and you know, sadly we couldn't keep hold of him. But once we'd got relegated, we knew that he was going to go on to carry on playing in the Premier League for many, many years, which he did with Aston Villa. And you don't begrudge someone like that, Dad. Do you know what I mean? Because he was a great lad. He had a great season for Leicester. I think he was our Player of the Year that year. That tells you everything from a team who were eventually relegated from the Premier League. So you know, you can't hold him back. You can't begrudge him a move to a big club in Aston Villa. You know, I think we all recognise that Villa are a big club. But it was a privilege to have that one season with him, because he's a fantastic midfielder.
Again, what was he like as a person in the dressing room?
Not the brightest. I think Drakes will tell you he's not the sharpest tool in the box, but he's just he'll say some things at times that will leave you, what on earth are you going on about, sort of thing. But he was just a really good squad member, and he was another lad that, yeah, on a Tuesday night, if we're having a night out, he'd be one of the first down on the list.
Who was the toughest opponent or the best player that you ever played against, do you think?
For Leicester?
For Leicester, yeah. Presumably in that season that you were in the Premier League.
I tell you who was probably one of the best defenders that I would have had the pleasure of, training with, playing against in training, was Pontus Kamark, Swedish international. And he had this strange knack, Pontus, and, you know, we didn't see the best of him because he suffered horrendous knee injuries in his time here, which, I mean, hampered him hugely. But he came to the club and in his first few weeks, you could see what a good player that he was. And you could see why he played at the very, very highest level. And he had this strange knack of defending, where as normally a defender, he'll close you down quickly, he'll get touch tight, and he'll just keep his eye on the ball. Well, Pontus never did that. He would sort of close you down quickly, put you under pressure, but he would, instead of looking at the ball, he would look you square in the eye. And it, honestly, Dan, it's really off-putting, because it's something that I'd never seen done before, and I've never seen it done since, you know, from my time before playing for Leicester. It never happened to me. I'd never seen that type of defending before, and in my time after I left the club, I'd never seen a player defend like that.
But did it work, mate? Clearly it worked, though.
It worked, mate, because it puts you off. You can just see this lad rushing towards you, and he's not even looking at the ball. He doesn't care about the ball. All he cares about is your position and what your body's going to do. And he just keeps looking, staring in your eyes. But sadly, I didn't get to play with Pontus nowhere near as much as I would have liked, because he was another. And that's the thing, that the manager in my time at Leicester never signed any bad lads, any bad characters. They all seemed to be, you know, top lads that fitted into the dressing room up at Beaver Drive within a few days of joining. Yeah, but sadly, you know, I didn't get to play as many games as I would have liked with Pontus, because in that time that I did play with him, Dan, you know, he played right back, very similar to Millsy. He showed what great service and what great deliveries he could have given me at that back post for me to hopefully come on and score a few goals.
Well, that ties nicely actually into the next question, because it's what was the best partnership you had on the pitch during your time at Leicester City? Now, obviously, naturally, maybe when you saw this, you might have thought, oh, strike partner, for example. But it could be as you were just referencing there, it could be a fullback who always put in brilliant balls for you. I don't know who's the one for you, do you think?
That's a good shout. I've never thought of it like that before. When someone who's the best partnership, because as a forward, you just tend to think, oh, who I played alongside with. I really enjoyed Gary Mills for obvious reasons. Great delivery, could pick you out. Mills, he was sort of coming towards the end of his career when I sort of signed the club, and Larry sort of more times than often would play on that right hand side of the back four. So I only played a few games with Millsy. For some reason, Dan, and this has happened to me in my career, that you don't know someone, you've seen them play, you know about them, but as soon as you start training with them, as soon as you start playing with them, you hit it off straight away. And that happened with David Speedy. We seem to, I mean, it happened with me and Craig Bellamy when I signed for Norwich, and when Craig got in the team. I just knew what he wanted. And he knew what I wanted. I got to know his strengths and weaknesses straight away, and vice versa. And the same with Speedo. You know, Speedo would know 9 times out of 10 I would flick the ball on, and he would sort of react to where the ball was gonna land, and he'd get on the end of it. And we just formed a good partnership. And it's not as if we worked on that, to be fair. You know, you have practice matches and different exercises that you can do. But we just got on. And I think that all comes from getting on well with someone off the pitch and having that good relationship off the pitch. And if you've got that with someone, I think that tends then to happen on the pitch. So from strike partners at Leicester, you know, Speedo, Mark Robbins, Stevie Claridge, David Lowe at times, young Emmy when he first got into the team. I'd have to say Speedo, because from that very first game we against Wolves, we just hit it off. We had an understanding, whether you call it telepathic or whatever it is, I can't really put my finger on it. It just happened naturally.
Yeah, it's an interesting point that you say about getting on with someone off the pitch. It then helps on the pitch. Was there ever a time in your career, not necessarily at Leicester, it could have been anywhere, where the exact opposite happened? You maybe didn't quite get on with anyone. Obviously, you don't need to name any names necessarily, but was there ever a time when if you didn't get on with someone off the pitch, but on it, it just seemed to click? Was that something that happened in your career? Because you often hear that among strike partners in the game.
The only name that springs to mind, and I've mentioned it before, is Craig Bellamy. I mean Craig's when he was at Norwich, he was a young boy. He's a very confident boy. Very opinionated. Never want to not voice his opinion, and I don't mind that. But some of the things that he said, you know, especially to the older pros, were a little bit close to the mark. Maybe he showed a lack of respect to the older pros, and I had so many fallings out with him. Really, really did. It got heated at times. I remember on a pre-season tour in Ireland, we finished our tour, and the manager went, "You can have one night out," and that was on the last night. We all had a few drinks. I can remember having a massive argument with him in a pub in Dublin, and calling him a one season wonder when he was 17. Boy, did those words come back to haunt me. But yeah, I had plenty of fallings out with Craig, plenty of fallings out with him, but it never affected our performance on the pitch. As soon as we crossed that white line, you know, we'd forget what had happened 2 days ago in training, you know, what he'd said to me, what I'd said to him. And don't get me wrong, it's not as if we hated each other. We got on well, you know, we had a Welsh connection. He'd come round to mine for dinner, but he'd spend more time on the PlayStation with my son, because he was more my son's age than he was mine. So, you know, it's not as if we didn't get on. We did get on, but we fell out. We had that love-hate relationship. But as soon as we crossed that white line, I knew what he brought to the team, and I knew that he improved me as a player. And I think he sort of understood and knew that as well.
What was your most memorable game or your most memorable moment with the club? Be your debut again, potentially.
Yeah, it was. That was a special day for me. The hat-trick against Derby at Filbert Street that season. Never scored a hat-trick in my career. And to score one in such a big game, a local derby, at home, you know, all three in front of the cop was a special night. Got to take my first match ball home for the three goals that I scored.
That is still referenced, isn't it, in your song, in the song Leicester fans sing
about
you.
The song was sort of invented the week after that derby game, after the hat-trick that I scored. So that's got to be right up there. As an achievement, I think, Dan, I could be selfish and say, oh yeah, the three goals against Derby from a really personal point of view. But from achieving something, it has to be the Wembley playoff win against Derby. Even though I only played for 55 minutes, I think, because I missed the last six games of the season when bloody Matty Elliott, the big elbowed me at the Manor Ground and broke two of my ribs. 6 weeks before the end of the season, which meant I never played in our final six games in the running. Only trained a couple of days before the final, but Brian, you know, asked me, was I fit enough, because he wanted to start me. And I said, yeah, I've trained for a couple of days, and they feel fine. I'd love to start. So, and I didn't have the best of games. You know, I wasn't massively influential. I had a hand in our first goal when I've absolutely battered their goalkeeper for Walshy to stoop and head the equaliser in.
A lot of referees, particularly in the modern game, will give that a foul, wouldn't they?
That's a free kick all day long. mean, what on earth Roger Milford had seen, I don't even know. Because I think it was Roger's last game. I think it was Roger Milford, the referee from Bristol, the grey-haired, curly-haired, grey-haired fella. And he was a good referee, to be fair. And it was his last game. That playoff final was his last game. I mean, what he's seen, I don't know. Because you know, I know what I'm doing. I can see the ball has been lifted in nice and high. I can see he's coming out. I see I'm gonna reach there first, and I've just absolutely smashed him with all my strength, elbow, forearm, everything. 99 times out of 100, if referee blows, points to a free kick for the opposition, for the goalkeeper, for a free kick on the goalkeeper. But he never. When you say that, what on earth was Paul Williams doing on the goal line?
Well,
I've seen Paul a few times because he works at the academy at Norwich now, and we just laugh about it every time I see him. I just shake my head and start laughing. But you know, it was, and as I say, it wasn't my best game for the club by far. But because of what it meant, you know, having lost the previous two playoff finals, to finally get over that hurdle and win promotion, to beat Derby in the final, for Walshy, who more than anybody deserved to score the two goals that won us that game because of what he'd gone through with his cruciate knee ligament injury. It was just a great day for the football club. So as an achievement, I think, because it was my first playoff final win, which meant I was going to play in the Premier League for the first time, It has to be that one. It has to be the playoff final against Derby. Well, even though the playoff final against Crystal Palace, even though I wasn't involved, would run it close.
Take us inside the dressing room then after that Derby win.
I mean, it's a long old tunnel at the old Wembley, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? And I don't know if we were in the home, in the England dressing room, or the I'm not too sure. But we were as you're walking down the tunnel, we were on the right hand side, and I was a bit surprised by. It wasn't as plush as what I thought the Wembley dressing rooms would be. I mean, they were. I would think the home dressing room in the Carling stand was probably bigger than the Wembley one. I mean, they had a big old bath in there. We were all in the bath messing about. But one thing it did have, it had a little bar in one of the corners, and I think there was three or four crates of Budweiser, champagne. So you can just imagine songs that were being sung, bottles were being opened, champagne was being sprayed everywhere, players were naked, players just in slips. There was all sorts going on, but it was a great feeling, mate. It was such a relief, because playoffs, you can't enjoy them until the final whistle, until you've got the result. And to know that we'd won the game, and you know, all hell was broke loose. You know, it's only a couple of hours from Wembley to Leicester up the M1. I'll never forget it. That nearly every bridge that we went under on that M1, there was Leicester fans, there were Leicester flags, there were Leicester banners, and obviously we're just getting smashed on the coach because we were going straight to the. I think it was the Sketchley Grange in Hinchley. Mm. Hinkley, that yeah. We were having a bit of an after party. So by the time we got off the bus, we weren't quite as bad as Freddie Flintoff after, you know, he'd produced in the Ashes. But yeah, we weren't far off there. There was a few drunken heads getting off that coach.
Well, it was a fantastic achievement, and like you said, one that is your most memorable at your time, and one you'll remember forever. We've kind of rattled through those first few questions because I wanted to leave a little bit more time for your dream 11, your my 11, just because of the the levels of quality that are in it. So, what is your formation? Firstly, Ewan, that you've gone for.
So, for
those of you, sorry, Ewan, that are new, and for yourself. This My 11, we've asked all of the guests to pick the best 11 players that they played with during their football careers. That could be obviously internationally, which a lot of Ewans are, or throughout any of your clubs. But a minimum of five of them have to be Leicester players as well. So sorry, Ewan, go on. What's your formation that you've gone for?
I've gone for a 4-1-4-1. I mean, I'm a bit old fashioned, Dan. I am. I'm a bit old school. I would normally go 4-4-2, a bit like Mike Bassett. But I could do that and get the players that I wanted to into my team, and there's a few that I've had to leave out, and it's not easy. It's been a tough choice. It has been a tough choice, but hopefully people will think it's not a bad side.
Yeah, well, your goalkeeper, it's a pretty good start.
Yeah, I mean, two choices for me really. Tony Coleman, absolute magnificent keeper when I first moved to Watford, or Big Neville Southall. Big Neville Southall just shades it for me. It's time, best goalkeeper in the world. Hard worker, the teetotal. He was great with me when I first got into the Welsh squad. You know, he was one of the most experienced players, but sort of put his arm around the young lads who broke into the squad. But as a goalkeeper, absolutely outstanding. We do it a shooting session after training. A lot of clubs do it, Dan, just bit of finishing. And never stay in goal. He wouldn't even use his hands. Honestly, he would let the ball, he'd use any part of his body apart from his hands. He'd head things away, he'd chest things away, and it was nearly impossible to score against him. And, you know, he wasn't like goalkeepers now, 6'3", 6'4", 6'5". I think maybe 6 foot, if that. But he was so agile. He was so agile. And as I say, best goalkeeper for a period of 5, 6, 7 years when he was at Everton. When Everton were flying high, he was the best keeper in the world.
So you're back four then. You've got another Wales international teammate in Kevin Ratcliffe as one of the centre-halves, along with Walshy. We know, obviously, an awful lot about Walshy as the other central defender. Then you've got Mike Whitlow and Gary Mills as the two full-backs. What were they like?
Yeah, Millsy, because of the service that he would give a centre forward of my height and strength in the air, just a joy to play with. You know, you didn't really have to do too much to score a goal, because the pace would be perfect, the height would be perfect. You just had to make sure you made good contact, and if you did that, then, you know, 9 times out of 10 you would score a goal. You know, Millsy, European Cup winner with Forest. Sadly, didn't get to play with him as many times as I would have liked. But because I've obviously got to get former Leicester teammates into the team, I've had to switch things around. I've had to think a little bit more about things, Dan. And yeah, Mickey Whitlow. I think he was a top left back. You know, great one-on-one defender. Not many wingers got the best out of Wits. Strong in the tackle. Fit as if I can say that. You're one of the fittest players I've ever played with, up and down that left-hand side. Had a lovely left foot on him. And you always knew what you were going to get from Wits. You know, Wits was he'd never be a 9 out of 10, and then he dropped to a 5 out of 10. He was Mr. Consistent. He would be 7.5, 8 every week for you. And I think that's why I've got to put him at left-back.
So you said you were doing 4-1-4-1. So obviously the defensive midfielder is next. And is this quite a tough subject, a tough thing for you to talk about, the person that you've chosen in this position?
I mean, it is, because he was a good friend. He was a good teammate, a great captain.
Sorry, Gary Speed, for anyone.
Gary Speed, yeah. I mean, when I'm picking any side that's asked me, I've got to put Gary in there. Just a great lad. You know, he sort of broke into the Welsh full squad at the same time as myself. So, you know, we'd sort of grown up through the Welsh ranks, if you like, from, you know, under 18s and the 21s, even though I was a little bit older than him. But just a good lad who was a good captain, who looked after everybody, who made sure everything was right for every single member of that squad. But his performances as well. You know, I've played for big clubs, a midfielder who's got plenty of goals, was great in the air, So it's I've got to pick Gary. Whenever I'm picking a best 11, I've got to. I'm not because he was a great lad and obviously what happened in 2012 when he sadly he took his own life. He was a very, very, very good player.
You've gone for four attacking midfielders after to play in front of Gary Speed. We've already talked about Mark Draper, so you've got him in there, obviously, from Leicester City. Now, the other three here, these attacking midfielders, it's some trio. So you've got Emil Heskey. We'll talk a little bit about him in a moment. Because obviously he was very young when in fact, we'll talk about it now, because Heskey was very young, clearly, when he came through during your time at Leicester.
But he, what was he, 16, 17, when he broke through? But he was a man then. You know, his physique was ridiculous. His strength was unbelievable, even at that tender age. His pace. And Emmy was a... I mean, I've played with two players who've been freaks of nature, Emmy and Darren Huckabee, because it doesn't matter what distance, running-wise, they are asked to do. They are the best at that distance. Whether it be a marathon, whether it be a 50-yard sprint, they would be first. And they were both special players. But, I mean, because obviously the scenario of five Leicester players and the further players I've played with, for the career that Emmy went on to have, and you could tell he was special. You know, you could tell he was going to go on to great things, you know, play for England, win trophies, play for big clubs, and that's exactly what Emmy did. And he's similar to all the lads I've chosen. Just a lovely, lovely lad. Quiet in his nature. Wasn't a big time Charlie. Just a proper down to earth Leicester lad.
The next player then is John Barnes. Now you've referenced already that you're obviously a Liverpool fan, still are a Liverpool fan. So what was, I know this was before his time, wasn't it, with Liverpool? But what was it like anyway playing with John Barnes?
John could do things with the ball that I could only dream of. I mean, people say he only had a left foot. He only needed a left foot, to be fair. You know, he could glide past people, running with a ball at his feet. You couldn't get anywhere near him. Great dribbling skills, scored goals, assisted. He could play anywhere against that, anywhere across that front line. He could play as a second centre forward. He could play on the right, but predominantly he played most of his career on the left. But yeah, I mean, you know, Watford were a good side back when I first joined them. They'd been to the FA Cup final. They'd finished second in the old First Division, what is the Premier League now. And they had John Barnes on the left and Luther Blissett up front, who scored so many goals for the club. And the club's success at that time would have been down to John Barnes creating and Luther Blissett scoring. So, yeah, John Barnes, just in training, Dan, honestly, mate, at times you'd have to have two balls because you couldn't get it off Barnsley. You know, he'd just be taking everybody on in small-sided games and you just couldn't get anywhere near him. He had great balance, good upper body strength, just everything that you needed from your winger.
And then the other winger, I don't know which one you'd play on the left and which one you'd play on the right, because they're both obviously predominantly left-sided players, is Ryan Giggs, obviously an international teammate of yours.
Yeah, another lad I got to know well with when in the Welsh squad. And you know, it's hard to choose who was the better player between Ryan and John, because they were both very similar, both similar ability, you know, both great at running with the ball. I think probably Giggsy was slightly quicker with the ball at his feet, running at defenders that John was. But yeah, you know, Giggsy, the most decorated player in the country, I think won more trophies than any other player. You know, scored over 100 goals. A one club man, if you like, with Manchester United. And I was fortunate probably to play with Giggsy on maybe 10 occasions for Wales. Sadly, Dan, sadly, and this is one thing I will never forgive him for all the goals he created, he never created one for me for Wales.
What was he like? Ryan Giggs is
good lad, quiet lad, kept himself to himself. I mean, let's not forget, he was a superstar at the time. You know, he was one of the most recognisable faces in this country back then. You know, playing for one of the biggest clubs in the world, one of the best players in that Manchester United side. So whenever we went, it was all about Giggsy, you know, and he never turned an autograph down. He'd come out on a night out, he'd keep himself to himself, he'd sort of go and sit in a corner with a couple of the players. You know, he didn't want to be centre of attention. You know, wanted to sort of take a backward step. That was the type of person he was.
And then finally, up front, to complete an incredibly good team, you've got another one of your international teammates, haven't you? And again, another link to the club that you grew up supporting.
Yeah, certainly. It's got to be Ian Rush. Just an out-and-out standing goal scorer. Both feet, pace, good in the air. Just a magnificent... magnificent goal scorer. You've just got to have a look at his record, especially in his first period at Liverpool. It's brilliant, absolutely brilliant. Had that understanding with Kenny Dalglish. But you just talk about a centre forward once. He was the JB Vardy back then, sort of thing. You know, wanted the ball in front of him so he could show his pace, show his strength. And once he'd got in front of the defender, one on one with the goalkeeper, he was always going to put it in the back of the net. There was only one man I was ever gonna choose to be my centre forward, I'm afraid.
And again, same question, really. What was he like inside the dressing room?
Funny lad, typical Scouser. Even though he's a Chester boy, and that was the good thing about that Welsh squad, Dan. Even though you had some big characters in there, you know, some players who'd won the league, who'd won FA Cups, who'd got over 50, 60, 70 caps. They were just good lads, and they made life easy for youngsters like myself who was scared of walking into that dressing room, because these are players I'd watched on the match of the day, these players I were in awe of. But they just welcomed me with open arms and just made you relax, made it so easy for you to integrate into that environment.
Excellent. Right, that's some team then. I'll just run through it quickly. Neville Southall, Gary Mills, Walshy, Kevin Ratcliffe and Mike Whitlow, the back four. Gary Speed in the holding role with Ryan Giggs, John Barnes, Mark Draper, Emil Heskey, all supporting Ian Rush. It's a tough job for that back six there in that team with that front five.
I've gone attacking, Dan. I want to be an entertaining manager, so I've gone full-blown attack.
before we ask you the final question, which I think is a lot of people's favourite one to answer, I've got a quick trivia question for you. So we ask every guest that comes on and does Inside the Dressing Room just a question about themselves and about their time at Leicester. So yours is, in the 1995-96 promotion season with Leicester, you were the Foxes' top scorer. How many did you get in all competitions?
I'm going to say 19.
You got 19 in the league and you got 20, 20 in all competitions.
I got 20, did I? Yeah. Right.
Well done, very, very close. We can we can pretend that you thought I was asking about the league. So yeah, 19 was bag on for that one. Right, final question then, Ewan, on Inside the Dressing Room. Again, as I said, it's one that a lot of people like to hear. Is what's your favourite night out or your favourite trip away as a group with Leicester City?
There's only one, mate. There is only one. I mean, and to be fair, in my 2.5 years, we had plenty. And I think that's what sort of gelled that togetherness and that team spirit that we had. But there's only one, and that we after our playoff win against Derby, we, as a squad, every single one of us, went away to Magaluf for 4 or 5 days. All right, Magaluf's not as bad as what it is now, but it still wasn't the best place in the world, you know what I mean? But we didn't care. We were only there for one thing, mate, and that was to drink plenty and get absolutely pissed every night. That's exactly what we did.
Must be some good stories from that. Some not broadcastable. Some of them might be.
Do you know what? Some of them I can't remember. But that's what we were about. That's what we, you know, we worked hard and we played hard. You know, and it would be, from you'd get in late, you'd get in at 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning, and then you'd have the likes of Walshy and David Speedy waking everybody up at 8:30, either to go and play golf or to start drinking at 10 o'clock again. But you know, when you run promotion to the Premier League, you've got to celebrate it. And believe you me, we didn't half celebrate it. And I remember seeing, I think at the same time, Coventry were out there. And we were in the same bar this one time. And I can remember seeing Dion Dublin there. Because I'd known Dion for a good few years. And put it this way, they were quite as joyful moods as we were, and I don't think they were drinking nowhere near as much, and they were far more well behaved than we were. But we didn't cause any trouble whatsoever. We didn't get in any fights. You know, we enjoyed ourselves in the right way.
Lovely. Well, that's a fantastic place to end it, I think, Ewan. Thank you very much for coming on Inside the Dressing Room. I hope you enjoyed looking back at your time with the Foxes. I know, obviously, you're at King Power Stadium a lot, aren't you? You do a lot of media stuff with us, but it must have been nice to reminisce about all those times.
Honestly, Dan, there were great memories. And I think I've said to you in the past, if I have got one regret from my career, you know, you shouldn't really have regrets, but I have, is I should never have left Leicester when I did. It was something that I look back on, and I shouldn't have. I should have stayed at Leicester. But you know, it's done. But yeah, I loved my time there, even though it was short, only 2.5 years. It was a proper good club to play for.
This was an LCFC Radio production of Inside the Dressing Room. To hear more episodes with former Leicester City players, please subscribe to our podcast from all your good podcast providers. Thank you for listening, and if you enjoyed it, share the podcast with your friends and fellow Blue Army that might enjoy it too.